It's Wednesday, June the 30th, and you're very welcome to the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Harry McGee, sitting in this week for Hugh Linehan. Today, we're going to do a potted history of Irish by-elections, and if they tell us anything, or nothing, about the state of the national political situation. I'm delighted to be joined by Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at DCU, who is also the author of a major biography on Charles J. Haughey, which is due to be published later this year. Good morning, Gary, and welcome to the podcast, and thanks very much for joining me.
Good morning, Harry. Happy to be here.
So we're going to look at a peculiar feature of Irish politics, by-elections, and there have been quite a lot of them, over 50 since the early 1970s. And each of them tells a kind of a peculiar and unusual tale. So we're going to have a look at them and try to kind of winkle out some truths and some fallacies that relate to by-elections. And seeing that you're the author of this biography of Charles Haughey, there's no better place to start perhaps than going right back to 1979, late in the year, when two by-elections were held that were very critical for the future of the fates of two people in Fianna Fáil, Jack Lynch and Charles Haughey. So perhaps you can describe those by-elections and the consequences that flowed from them.
Yeah, thanks, Harry. As you said, about 50 by-elections in the last couple of decades, but I think 130 over just about that figure since the foundation of the state, and probably no two more important by-elections than Cork City and Cork North East, I think, in 1979. Jack Lynch, remember, had won a huge majority of 20 seats at the 1977 general election, the famous Bring Back Jack, after he had lost power in 73 to the National Coalition of Fine Gael and Labour. He had brought Haughey back to the front bench in January of 1975 after Haughey's purgatory in the post-arms trial era. And yeah, there was two deaths, Labour's Pat Kerrigan and Sean Brosnan of Fianna Fáil. Both sadly died earlier in 1979. And by November, the government had decided to move the writs, have the by-elections. But in the course of the 2 years, the infectious enthusiasm across the state for Lynch had dissipated. There was a tremendous lethargy in both those by-elections from Fianna Fáil's perspective. And they basically ran pretty hopeless campaigns. The big thing about it, of course, is Lynch, although he lived in Dublin in Ratgar, he was of Cork. Cork City was his homeland. He was associated with Cork, famous hurler and footballer, as we know, in the 40s, five All-Ireland medals in a row. And to lose in Cork City particularly, his candidate John Dennehy, a steel worker in Irish Steel, lost to Liam Burke, who went on to have a relatively good career, I think, for Fine Gael. But the shock across the political system it was quite enormous. Now, remember also, Lynch had been thinking of going for some time. He had been Taoiseach, first of all, in 1966, when he replaced Lamass, won the 69 election, where Haughey was his director of elections, out in 73, back in 77. And by 79, he certainly had been thinking of moving on. George Colley was his preferred candidate. But the big thing was the enormous amount of backbenchers that there was, 50-odd backbenchers, many of them elected for the first time in 77, worried about their seats and worried what would happen in the next election, June 1982. And the loss of those two seats to Fine Gael set off the dynamic over the following month, where Lynch would resign on the 5th of December 1979. And 2 days later, to the 1 month to the defeat in Cork, Charles Haughey, rather sensationally to a lot of people, but certainly not to himself, won the Fianna Fáil leadership election against George Colley, 44 votes to 38, and the rest is history.
Now, was that particular by-election, was it breaking point for Lynch at the time, Gary, or was that decision an impromptu decision of his own? Could he have lasted for a while longer, perhaps a year longer, if he had not made that dramatic decision a month later that he was going to stand down?
Yeah, he could certainly have gone on into 1980. And I think the expectation was that he would go on. But the reason he did call this kind of snap leadership election, and he was encouraged to do so by Collie, Des O'Malley, Seamus Brennan and others, was that they feared that Haughey would get even more stronger in opposition, well, not in opposition, but as in opposition to Collie, let's say, and that the backbenchers, and remember, we're talking about people like who became household names afterwards, Sean Doherty, Albert Reynolds, Mark Killalea, Jackie Fahey, these rural backbenchers, these were the, rather than Dublin, these were Haughey's people. So the snap election, it was assumed, would catch Haughey unprepared. And it did a little bit. I mean, in my forthcoming book, I have a large section about the leadership, as one might imagine. The received wisdom is of sort of Haughey cajoling for months, bullying people. There's certainly more to it than that. But Lynch, I think, went early in 79. And remember, we're talking about a 2-day election campaign between the 5th and the 7th to try and ensure that George Collie would win, and hoping to catch Haughey unprepared. But Collie himself was equally as unprepared, although he thought he had prepared better than he actually had.
OK, so that's the first phenomenon that I can see of a by-election, that its consequences play out in internal party dynamics. It bolsters up leadership, or it can put paid to a leadership. And there were a few critical by-elections, for example, that I recall in and around 2000 and 2001, that became critical for the survival of John Bruton when he was leader of Fine Gael. So even though the implications of the by-elections were very little on a national level, within the internal dynamics of a party, they became very important. And that's one of the things that a trend or a trope that we can see in terms of Irish politics and by-elections, Gary.
You could see it even later on with Brian Cowan. In late 2010, when Piers Doherty, another household name, won that election in Donegal. We can come back to that later on if you want, Harry. But again, the importance of that was this presaged the sort of collapse of the Fianna Fáil Green coalition in early 2011, the resignation of Cowan and the coming to the leadership of Fianna Fáil of Micheál Martin.
Okay, and then we come to the second kind of characteristic. This is a by-election as something that's a unique event that turns on its own characteristics. And in this characteristics, we're talking about a good old-fashioned stroke. And this is the 1982 by-election in Dublin West, where Charles J. Haughey was Taoiseach at the time and was defending a minority government. And he came up with a ruse that would allow him make that minority into a majority government. Perhaps you could describe that by-election and its consequences as you see it, Gary.
Yeah, so Haughey fought 6 by-elections and won 5 of the 6, Harry. But the one he's known for losing famously is Dublin West. I live in Dublin West here, sort of Brian Lenihan country. Brian Lenihan Senior and Junior, of course, were both distinguished representatives of this constituency. The February 1982 election was the second of those 3 elections in 18 months. Haughey had lost power in June of 81. The coalition government had fell. There was an election in February of 1982. Haughey had missed again an overall majority, but he formed a minority government. This is famously with support from Tony Gregory, as you might remember, and the listeners will remember. Also, Sinn Féin, the Workers' Party, had 3 TDs who voted for Haughey as Taoiseach in February of 82, but never really supported him, and were those who ultimately pulled him down in November, leading to the third of those 3 elections in 18 months. So a vacancy came in the European Commission. And Dick Burke, who had been previously a commissioner, Fine Gael, a TD, how he saw an opportunity, as you said, a good old-fashioned stroke. His idea was he would ask Burke to take the position of commissioner with the expectation that Fianna Fáil would win the subsequent by-election in Dublin West. Burke had initially turned him down. How he persuaded him to eventually take the position. Burke had been completely shocked and assailed Or he was shocked by the assailing he took from his fellow Fine Gael TDs, who were completely appalled at the expectation that he would take the offer of the European Commissionership from Haughey. So after some toing and froing and some indecision, Burke finally did take the European Commissionership, leaving the seat in Dublin West vacant. And Haughey and Fianna Fáil were fully confident that they would win it. They nominated Eileen Lamass, you know, the Lamass name, royalty in Fianna Fáil. And Fine Gael nominated a chap called Liam Skelly. Gareth Fitzgerald, leader of Fine Gael, had never even heard of Liam Skelly until he was told that Skelly would be the candidate in Dublin West. And, you know, like many of these by-elections, it didn't go to plan. There was increases in PRSI. There was complaints all across the constituency about jobs. There was a huge jobs crisis, as we know, in the early 1980s. There was high inflation. And Fianna Fáil never saw their defeat coming. Lamass topped the poll, but Skelly was close enough to her to overtake her on transfers. Tomás McGill, actually, leader of the Sinn Féin Workers' Party, although not in the Dáil, had polled reasonably well as well. And the result was, in many ways, calamitous for Haughey. He didn't get the extra seat that would have given him some extra support in the Dáil. And he had lost patronage within Fianna Fáil itself. He couldn't nominate, obviously, a Fianna Fáil TD because he didn't have the numbers, and he wasn't enamoured by anyone outside of the firmament, so to speak. And the result was a calamitous defeat. That happened in May. He won an election in Dublin or in Galway a couple of months later, but people remember Dublin West, as you said, the stroke certainly, but also the defeat. By November 82, his government had collapsed, and he found himself out of office until 87.
And is it your own analysis, Gary, that the electorate saw through the stroke and voted accordingly, that they essentially called Fianna Fáil and Charles Haughey out on that, and their vote was motivated by their displeasure at such a stroke being pulled in the name of democracy?
Well, I think that's part of it. I wouldn't oversell it, Harry. And Fine Gael certainly played on the on that point. I mean, it was a bit tricky for Fine Gael as well, because obviously it was their man who had taken the position. Haughey sold Burke as a previous European commissioner who had vast experience of the sort of the European bureaucracy, would get a good commissionership and would be an important sort of national player and defending Ireland's interest on the international scene. It was difficult for Fine Gael to sort of attack their own man, but certainly on the doorstep they kept bringing it up. And remember, Haughey's character was constantly a feature of elections during his time as leader of Fianna Fáil, because he led a divided party. I mean, he didn't really have a united party until 87. In 1982, he still had the enmity fully of people like Colley O'Malley, Martin O'Donoghue. But I do think part of it was the good denizens of Dublin West seeing that you know, there was something not quite right with them having to go and face a by-election just a couple of months after the general election because of a stroke, yeah.
Okay, so we move on to another characteristic, as I see it. I'm going to get quite technical here. This one is called giving the government a good old kicking at a particular moment of time. And a statistic that has always stood out to me, Gary, is this one, that there have been 34 by-elections since 1982. You referred to the one of the by-elections that Charles Haughey won. That was Noel Tracy winning Galway East in 1982 when Fianna Fáil was in government. And Noel Tracy, of course, is still a bright and present personality in that constituency of Galway East, though he has retired from politics since then. But they won in 1982, and there have been 34 by-elections held since then. And of those, government parties have only won three. And if you look at the three that they've won, we look at another characteristic of Irish by-elections. It's if a person dies in office, sadly, often a relative will stand And in many cases, the relative, not all cases, but in many cases, the relative has a very good chance of winning the seat. And we saw that happening in the case of Helen McEntee succeeding her father, Shane, in Meath East in 2014. And Gabrielle McFadden succeeding her sister, Nicky McFadden, who sadly died around the same time. And then the only other one that the government has won was after the passing of Brian Lenehan Jr. In 2011. A by-election was held some months after that, and it was won by the Labour Party. And Labour Party, I would argue, was kind of still enjoying the afterglow of its most successful election ever. If that by-election had been held a year later, I think the Labour Party would not have had a hope of retaining that particular seat. So this notion that it gives a government a kicking and then it doesn't really play out when it comes to the succeeding general election. You gave an example earlier on of Tom Hayes in 2001, winning spectacularly for Fine Gael in Tipperary South, as it was then, and that not playing out at all in the subsequent by-election, which Fianna Fáil handily won.
Yeah, I mean, the Patrick Nulty one in 2011 is interesting. As you said, if that happened 6 to 9 months later when the Troika cuts hit, it's very hard to see him, how he would have won. He was also on the left, remember, of the Labour Party. He had run as Joan Burton's running mate in the, it's hard to think of Labour having a running mate now, but in Dublin West he polled reasonably well in the February election. He was the obvious candidate, although on the left and sceptical of coalition. And he won. He beat off Ruth Coppinger, who then took the seat after Nulty resigned due to various personal circumstances. But also remember, Fianna Fáil were still in, you know, political purgatory after the bailout, the Troika, notwithstanding the sympathy that there was in the constituency for Brian Lennon. Remember, Brian Lennon was the only Fianna Fáil politician to win a seat in Dublin in the February 2011 general election. Quite extraordinary when you think of it. I mean, Hottie would have been appalled at the collapse of Dublin or the Fianna Fáil vote in Dublin. So I think that's interesting. Tom Hayes, remember, this was June of 2001. Why this is interesting is this is the first time Fianna Fáil don't come first or second in a by-election. They actually came third. Their candidate, Michael Maguire, was eliminated before, I think, Labour's Phil Pendergast, and Tom Hayes of Fine Gael won the seat. That was in June of 2001. The following May, Bertie Ahern came agonisingly close to winning an overall majority, which I think people like me and you and other lots of people who consider themselves politically aware and maybe even sophisticated thought could never be done. And well, it wasn't done, but he came pretty close in 2002, perhaps defeated by Michael McDougall and his famous poll in Ranelagh. And no one really remembers Tipperary South and the implications of it. Remember, it came during a difficult time for the government. Summer of 2001 was quite difficult for it. There were various allegations. The tribunals were ongoing, of course, and there was things coming out of those tribunals that infected Fianna Fáil in particular. But in the long run, it had very little significance. Some by-elections are more significant than others, and while at the time it looked that might have presaged the sort of demise of that government, that certainly didn't happen. You might remember, of course, that from 1997 onwards, people were saying that the Fianna Fáil PD government wouldn't last, and as it turned out, I think it became the longest-lasting government in the history of the state.
Okay, just another thing is, so even though sometimes they don't have any implication for the national election that follows, there are moments when a by-election captures a particular zeitgeist. And I'm thinking in particular of 2004, the by-election in Dublin Southwest, where Sinn Féin was expected, because it was very strong in that constituency even then, was expected to win that by-election, but they were usurped by Paul Murphy, and that came totally on the back of the campaign that he and his party had been conducting in relation to the water charges. So that water charges saw Paul Murphy catapult or somersault Sinn Féin. He actually finished second at the end of the poll, but he actually overcame Cathal King in subsequent counts to win the seat. So occasionally you'll see a by-election. It's almost like an opinion poll. It's a snapshot in time that this accurately reflects the feeling or the sentiments of the electorate at this particular moment in time. Maybe 6 months down the road, the dynamic will have changed. But at this moment in time, that's the zeitgeist. And that's what Paul Murphy captured in 2014.
Yeah, he did. And the other interesting thing about that was I think candidates matter. And Paul Murphy, as we know, you know, he's been in public life now since he won that by-election in 2014. Very eloquent, very articulate, very trenchant in his views. And I think Sinn Féin chose the wrong candidate. And Cathal King didn't perform very well on the campaign trail, on the stump. He was generally perceived as a weak candidate in television and radio debates. I remember him on a rather chaotic show that Vincent Brown held on his
Vincent Brown shows ever anything but chaotic.
Well, anything but on TV with you know, and he was pretty poor, I thought, and I think that was the general feeling. But there was also the feeling that the brand would sort of see him home, and it didn't. And as you say, Murphy, water charges were a huge issue. They remained a huge issue, and Paul Murphy has built his career on the back of it. Now, he would say that, of course, it's much wider than water charges, his campaign, perpetual campaign in terms of his own political agenda. But yeah, the by-election was really crucial for him. It was an interesting election in the fact that no one considered that the Fianna Gael or Fianna Fáil candidates had had much of a chance, which was interesting, I think, in and of itself. But Dublin South West, as we know, pretty strong left-wing constituency for a number of years.
Yeah, I think John Le Hart, the Fianna Fáil candidate, only got 8% in that particular by-election, which showed you how low Fianna Fáil stock had fallen at that particular moment. Going back to that 1982 by-election, one of the things that struck me about it was that between them, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil got 80% of the vote. It was a complete two-horse race. Everybody else was all but excluded. So it shows you how much the respective fortunes of both parties has fallen over subsequent decades.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary. I mean, we started talking about 1979, but if you look at the 1977 election, you had Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Labour. And you really didn't have very many others. You had a few odd sort of fringe right-wing Catholic groups, a couple of independents, people like Noel Brown. You had Sinn Féin, the Workers' Party, trying to make their breakthrough. But beyond that, there was literally nobody else. It was the classic two-and-a-half party system. I think what strikes any observer of Irish politics here in 2021 is the multiplicity of parties. I actually drove through Dublin-based South to bring my sick dog out to UCD yesterday and again this morning, and you see the posters now, the Greens, the Social Democrats, who are both running energetic, although I think probably futile campaigns. But yeah, the multiplicity of parties. I mean, we have seen the collapse of the old party system. The sort of the loyalties of the Haughey days, the Fitzgerald days are long gone.
Now, we'll alight briefly like a butterfly on a flower to consider another celebrity candidate just for a second. And that was George Lee in 2009, who had a brief foray into politics before exiting quite hastily stage left back to RTE. But he came, I mean, his brand was so strong that he just whumped that by-election. He got 53% of first preferences and easily won on the first count. And it could be argued that Shane Ross, who succeeded him in that kind of leading role in Dublin South, which became Dublin Rat Down, was also a celebrity who arrived onto the scene. So sometimes for a by-election, a celebrity name does help. There aren't too many of them. And I think it backfired on Fine Gael afterwards. And I think nobody has really tried that experiment since. But it certainly worked for them in 2009.
Yeah, like, I mean, 2009, the context there, of course, is the bank guarantee scheme of September 2008, the collapse in the economy, the looming threat, which sadly came to happen, of the IMF, and the Troika. And George Lee ran record as saying that he said he felt he owed it to his children and his soon-to-be grandchildren that he had to make a stand. Always considered himself Fine Gael, I think. Yeah, and Romtom as the celebrity candidate. Problem for him and for Fine Gael was that they didn't know what to do with him when he arrived at the gates of Leinster House. I think he expected to be vaunted straight onto the front bench. But poor George Lee did have a very frustrating experience. And, you know, many TDs, this happens to them, Harry. Not even from Dublin, but if you look at rural Ireland, they rock up to the Dáil when they're elected. There's great jubilation. Their family are with them in the VIP section in the pre-COVID days. Then suddenly the following week, they're there and they don't know what to do. Most of them can't wait to get back to their constituencies. And this has been a problem for decades. And I think in Dublin, Lee was sort of a victim of this. He didn't know what he wanted to do. Fine Gael certainly didn't know what they wanted to do with a man. He had a very unhappy experience and was quite happy to get back to RTÉ in a different capacity to what he had been. He was a household name, of course, because he was the voice of doom around the collapse of the economy in 2008. Like, in one way, I have some respect for him. Well, no, I have a lot of respect for him because, you know, more than people like me, he was prepared to put himself forward to the electorate to make a difference. It didn't work out, and he moved on. And Fine Gael themselves, of course, moved on.
He reflected at the end that he'd been reduced to the role of a show pony, and he was gone within a year. I think within 9 months.
He was. It was quite extraordinary. And of course, didn't he beat Seamus Brennan's son? I mean, we talked about families when we mentioned Helen McEntee, former student of mine, and Gabriel McFadden. I think, if I'm not mistaken, was Shea Brennan was his was the Fianna Fáil runner. Yeah,
Shea Brennan was beaten into third place. Alex White stood for the Labour Party, and Alex White came in second place in that by-election.
That's right.
You know, so it certainly is the case that. I mean, we talked about sort of dynasties and wives or children following in the footsteps of maybe sadly deceased husbands and fathers. But it doesn't always, of course, work out like that. And that was one of these cases.
OK, we'll turn our mind now we'll just look at two other by-elections and just look at the just two interesting trends. You're talking about candidate selection. Piers Doherty was perfect candidate for Sinn Féin in late 2010. And it's always been my contention that his singular action of winning that High Court action and the subsequent huge victory he had in the by-election, Sinn Féin wasn't going anywhere particularly fast. And he gave him that kind of momentum or impetus to really progress in the 2011 general election and make very, very significant gains. Piers Doherty, in some senses, was the enzyme to create a larger Sinn Féin after 2011. I don't know what your own reflections are on that, Gary.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That was the old Pat de Cope Gallagher seat. And when Pat de Cope went to the European Parliament, the seat became vacant, and it was vacant for, I mean, you know, a year and a half. I mean, it was quite extraordinary. And really, in one way, a denial, I think, of the rights of the citizens of Donegal to be adequately represented. I think this is what the courts basically decided in forcing the government to eventually move the writ. Again, the importance of candidates. Doherty, young, enthusiastic, articulate, eloquent, and sort of angry as well. I think the angry young man of Donegal politics at the time. He might have mellowed a little bit. He'd probably give out about my description of it.
He has tried to mellow a bit, but he's still a bit shouty.
Indeed, but he, you know, there was a big boost, of course, for Sinn Féin. It's interesting, 3 decades earlier, like we started with Haughey, there was his very first electoral test was in Donegal when Clem Coughlin won a by-election in November of 18. Haughey was very nervous about that particular by-election, and the Fianna Fáil threw all sorts of resources at it, promises of, you know, jobs and new schools and roads and the importance of infrastructure, all the jobs for Killybegs fishing, the whole shebang. 3 decades later, the I mean, Sinn Féin, of course, we now think of them as a government in waiting after their great breakthrough in February of 2020. Doherty was important, but it still took them quite a significant amount of time to build up that particular brand that they have now. And but his seat now, you look at it, it's rock solid. I mean, Donegal, they certainly had a setback when his... Yeah, Pádraig McLoughlin lost his seat, but obviously won it back in 2020. And, you know, it's Donegal now in many ways is the heartland of Sinn Féin.
Yeah, just a small reference to another 2014 by-election. It was Michael Fitzmaurice winning in Roscommon. And one of the reasons that's interesting is because he finished in second place and then overcame Ivan Connaughton to win the seat, as happened with Paul Murphy and Cathal King in Dublin South West. But generally, from what I can see, Gary, the person who finishes in first place after the first count is generally the person who wins. And that might be germane to the by-election that's happening next week. According to our poll, James Gagan is out in front with Ivana Bacic close enough behind him, 27% to 22%, according to our poll. A smaller sample, plus or minus margin of error of 4.4%. So it can go 4.4% either way. So it has to be treated with a note of caution. So transfers don't always mean that much in by-elections, and you have to do really well in transfers if you're to overcome somebody, especially if they're more than 3 or 4 percentage points ahead of you. And the second thing that's interesting in terms of this by-election as well is that there was a narrative that was being played out by Fine Gael in relation to it being a straight fight between itself and Sinn Féin, offering its voters a binary choice of, you know, Newbridge or nowhere, Fine Gael or Sinn Féin. But that's clearly not the case in this constituency. It suited both parties, but it's not reflected by the reality of this opinion poll.
Yeah, so just on the history first, Harry. Fitzmaurice, I think what's interesting there, of course, is he's an independent in the west of Ireland. The old duopoly of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, long gone, I think epitomised by Fitzmaurice's win on, in many ways, on a kind of a narrow enough agenda. But, you know, this idea of the population of the west, the forgetting of urban Ireland, of rural Ireland, and has been an effective performer ever since in that role. And that just goes to show, you know, that again, the old certainties of Irish politics are long gone. Transfers, you remember another good defender of the West, Michael Ring, beat Beverly Cooper Flynn, I think, was it back in 1994? He was in second place, but close enough to her to overtake her. But in general, in PR, PR-STV plus one, our own unique style, it's better to be ahead. I mean, we have famous examples like Cyprian Brady on Bertie's coattails when he only got 900 votes and, you know, took out Mary Fitzpatrick on Fianna Fáil that famous time. But in general, I mean, Sean Donnelly, that guru, a doyen of political scientists, and Michael Gallagher would say the same. It's better to be ahead. And particularly in a by-election, if you don't have a reasonably good first preference vote, you have no chance. What's interesting, it seems to me, about the Dublin Bay South election is James Gagan, many ways a sort of an unknown candidate. It's all this talk about Kate O'Connell and why didn't Fine Gael run her, and Leo Varadkar's protestations as this was a constituent decision sounded a bit hollow to me. But he's running on the brand, and his main challenger, Ivana Bacic, we see Labour at 3% in the polls, and we see Ivana Bacic now with a long and distinguished career of supporting progressive causes back to her days in Trinity in the mid-1980s on abortion rights, is close, and I think she might be in a better position to pick up transfers than James Gagan. What interested me on your poll, Harry, was that Gagan seemed good on transfers as well. I think he was 15% in comparison to Ivana Bacic's 25%. I mean, if he can pick up transfers, you know, it might just get him over the line. The other interesting thing, of course, was the lack of impact of the Sinn Féin candidate, Lynn Boylan. Now, Lynn Boylan, as a former MEP, and of course, her loss in 2019 cause a tremendous bout of introspection in Sinn Féin, the loss of her European seat and her generally poor results in the local elections. Maybe the fact that she's not of the constituency is having an impact. We saw Chris Andrews, of course, formerly Fianna Fáil, get elected for Sinn Féin in the February 2020 by-election. I think they will be disappointed by that poll. I think they would have expected her to poll better. I know in your column yesterday you talked about the potential of a shy Shinner vote in some of the leafier suburbs. I would be a bit sceptical about that, Harry, I have to say. But this is a huge by-election for Fine Gael. Think of it like this, you know, they had a disastrous, the worst result in their history in February 2020 under Leo Varadkar, who when he won the Fine Gael leadership election against Simon Coveney in the summer of 2017 was seen as the sort of the man who would lead Fine Gael to even greater heights, and that certainly hasn't happened. And I think a defeat here, although I don't think it puts his leadership in any great threat, would certainly be a tremendous blow to them. They would imagine Fine Gael in the heartland of Garrett Fitzgerald, the old Dublin South East, not having a TD. Unthinkable. But on your poll, I think Ivana Batchik is in with a good shout.
Yeah, and I think in just in terms of candidate selection, she seems to have been a good candidate selection by the Labour Party.
By far the best, by far. Like, there was talk maybe of Kevin Humphreys, who of course won a seat in 2011 with Rory Quinn. 2011, Fine Gael won two, Labour won two, all four seats in the constituency in the then government. So I think that was a very good call by Labour. And to be fair to Sinn Féin and to Lynn Boylan, I mean, she is probably their most high-profile non-TD, and it certainly would made sense, I think, for them to put her forward. Also, the issue, I think, of course, though, is if she was to win the seat, I can't imagine her running in Dublin Bay South at the next general election, because they're not, no matter how well they poll, they're surely not going to win two seats. One would have thought the sitting TD, Chris Andrews, is, you know, that's his bailiwick around the inner city. So, yeah. Could I just maybe talk, perhaps, Harry, just before we go, what other by-election I think is important is November of 2019, just 2 months before the general election of February 2020. Two indicators there, just I think listeners might be interested in. One, going back to Sinn Féin, Mark Ward's win in Dublin Midwest, masterminded by Onor Brin. And there was a lot of surprise when Mark Ward subsequently won or kept the seat at the February 2020 election. So that did presage the rise of Sinn Féin. But a cautionary word, Fianna Fáil won two of those four seats. They won in Cork North Central with Pádraig O'Sullivan, and they won in Wexford with Malcolm Byrne. Spawned a tremendous bullishness in Fianna Fáil during the for an early election in 2020, and look how that turned out. Absolutely disastrous for them, although the result is they ended up in government. But in the government, they certainly didn't want, I think the expectation in Fianna Fáil was they would win 50 seats, maybe more, and would cobble together a coalition with perhaps Social Democrats, Labour, the Greens, and it didn't turn out that way. And in fact, poor Malcolm Byrne lost his seat in the general election. Pádraig O'Sullivan held on in Cork North Central. But it just goes to show again that, as we started off with Harry, by-elections are not necessarily an accurate predictor of how general elections will go. But this one is important because we're a year into this government, and this is the first electoral test, and there's a lot riding on it.
Yeah, it certainly will be a weather vane, if nothing else. Well, on that note, thank you so much to our guest, Professor Gary Murphy. That's all from this week's Inside Politics. Thank you also to our producer, Susan Brennan. Hugh will be back next week. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with any thoughts or questions, you can email us at politicspodcast@irishtimes.com. Until next time, thank you very much indeed for listening. Slán.